WTOP and 1340 WMON, St. Albans, Charleston, Montgomery, The Jock. Fishing the waters of the wild and wonderful, the bluegrass and beyond. It's Hook, Line, and Sinker. Brought to you by Borders Sporting Goods. Let Borders help you get outdoors. Now, here's your host, Cam Connors.
Good Saturday morning, and thank you so much for catching another episode of Hook, Line, and Sinker. I am your host, Cam Connors, and bear with me this weekend. Allergies have done a number on me throughout the week. Been snotting and hacking all week long, and my voice is just a little, not as good as I had hoped it would be by the weekend. I'll just say that. Nevertheless, got a lot to get to today. Warm weather officially here for the season with its ticks. Definite concern. They are everywhere. In fact, I've actually found a few of them on me already when out fishing this year. Ticks, of course, a topic of public health, and they can carry an array of diseases. And that's one of the things that we're going to talk about today. Of course, they're on the rise in Appalachia, one of those diseases that's on the rise. Alpha-gal syndrome, better known as an allergy to red meat. It's linked directly to the Lone Star ticks. And joining me today on the show going to be Dr. Hannah Tiffin with the University of Kentucky's Department of Entomology. It's the study of insects. She is going to fill us in on the tick population, the specifics of the disease we're talking about, and the best ways to protect ourselves. Then also today we're going to have a little tackle talk. I'm going to fill you in on that underwater camera that I finally got to test out, and we're going to talk with an Appalachian lure maker, Mike's Custom Lures. And then a little later on, been super interested in fly fishing lately, and you really can catch just about anything on a fly outfit. It's not just trout. I mean, you could get bluegill, smallmouth, crappie, and even muskie. I'm going to be joined a little bit later on by the end of the show with Bo Robinson of Natives Fly Fishing. It's an outfitter and shop up towards Morgantown who, among other things, they specialize in fishing for muskie on the fly. So yeah, an exciting show lined up today. Before we jump headfirst into all that, though, let's pause for a second. Let's get a look at the weekend's weather and water conditions around the region. I like to start off with the water conditions, looking at the Coal River here in St. Albans, continuing its upward trend throughout the week. I look for it to hit around 70 degrees this weekend. Moving east to the Elk, where it runs into the canal, it's been bouncing, actually, this week between 63 and 67, so look for it to be about that same temperature range. Then over in the west, our friends in Kentucky, take a look at the Little Sandy River over towards where I live. They actually had an interesting trend this week. It looks like they increased the discharge from Grayson Lake. We started the week at 46 cubic feet per second, and it looks like by the end of the week, they're flowing now at 270 cubic feet per second. Quite an increase. Because of that, we're going to see a temperature drop on the Little Sandy. We started the week at 64, 65 degrees, but that higher flow rate has dropped it back down to about 58, 59. And as for the Ohio River, continuing at steady growth, finally touching 65 degrees this week. Moving on to take a look at the weather for today and tomorrow. Today, after the 80s that we saw on yesterday, cooler today with a high of 68 and rainy. Looks like a 90% chance of rain throughout the day today for just about all of us. About a half an inch is what's to be expected. Reasonable winds, 5 to 10 miles per hour, southerly. Tonight, showers continuing as we cool down just a little bit to 56, then the rain going to taper off to cloudy skies for the overnight. And tomorrow, mixed skies with a slight chance for scattered shower here and there. High around 70 and reasonable winds yet again tomorrow. Of course, those warmer temps mean one thing, well, a couple things, but tournament season in full swing now. Spring Valley High School, of course, hosting those tournaments every Thursday evening at Beach Fork from 6 until 9 with two-man boats. Get all the details on the SVHS Fishing Team's Facebook page. Then also coming up 1 week from today, the 6th annual Sinking ALS Bass Tournament at East Lynn. This one's actually hosted each year by Thurman Maynard and his sponsors. They put it on for a really great cause. The proceeds going towards helping folks with an ALS diagnosis. It helps them get support and treatment needed. We actually talked with Thurman about the tournament and the disease not too long ago, and he said you'd be surprised at the lack of support. It's better in recent years, but it's still not as good as it could be. So you can catch that previous episode now on podcast. I believe that was Hook, Line, and Sinker episode 2, I believe. You can go check that out online, WJYPAM.com, and it's also on your favorite podcast platforms as well, Pandora, Spotify, YouTube podcast, and so on. But back to the tournament, the Sinking ALS tournament, as I said, 1 week from today. That's Saturday the 10th at East Lynn. Registration, $125 per boat. Two-man teams with boats in the water at 7 a.m. Search for Thurman Tough on Facebook to get the complete details, or just go listen to that interview we did with Thurman, like I mentioned before. When we come back, we're going to be talking ticks. It's Hook, Line, and Sinker on the Jock. Border Sporting Goods, family-owned and operated for over 40 years, has the Tri-State's largest fishing selection, as well as a great archery department, with bows, arrows, and more. From the kids that shoot for their school teams to what mom and dad will need for their next hunting adventure, Borders carries major brands like Hoyt, Matthews, 10 Point, and Raven. Come shoot your next bow at Border Sporting Goods, 5876 U.S. Route 60, Ashland, Kentucky, and online at BorderSportingGoods.com.
At Straight Talk, we are all about no-brainers. Calling grandma for her recipe, no-brainer. Streaming one more episode at 2 a.m., big no-brainer. Getting real unlimited data where you buy bananas, the ultimate no-brainer. Switch now and get a free Samsung Galaxy A16 5G or Moto G Power 5G 2024 with select plans. Straight Talk, real unlimited data. Available at Walmart and StraightTalk.com. Offer valid through 5/19/25. Taxes and fees apply. Requires in-store single line activation on qualifying plan. For network management practices, visit StraightTalk.com/terms. Copyright 2025 Verizon.
Prescriptions require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Price varies based on product and subscription plan.
Hey guys, let's talk ED, because millions of men experience it, but not everyone can access or afford treatments like Viagra. Hims can help. Through Hims.com, you can access a full range of treatment options for ED through a 100% online process. To start your free online visit and save up to 95%, go to Hims.com/joy. HIMS.com/JOY.
When I grow up, I want to be a doctor.
I want to be a veterinarian.
When I grow up, I want to be a fireman.
I want to be a scientist, so I can connect like other teams and build other teams.
I want to be an astronaut so I can float up space.
When I grow up, I want to be a dancer.
I want to be a superhero, but if that doesn't work out, I will be an engineer.
When I grow up, I want to be a chef because I like ice cream.
I want to be a basketball player.
I want to be a jet pilot so I can take people to really fun places.
I want to be a drug addict.
Get to your kids before drugs do. Arm yourself with the facts. Get your free The Truth About Drugs booklet set today. Go to drugfreeworld.org.
Smokey the Bear.
After 80 years of learning his wildfire prevention tips, Smokey Bear lives within us all. Learn more at SmokeyBear.com. And remember,
only you can prevent wildfires.
Brought to you by the USDA Forest Service, your state forester, and the Ad Council.
Fishtails, we've got them. Now back to Hook, Line, and Sinker on the Jock.
Welcome back to Hook, Line, and Sinker, brought to you by Borders Sporting Goods. Find them at US 60 in Ashland, Kentucky. Your one-stop shop for all your hunting and fishing needs. Let Borders help you get outdoors. Find them online, BordersSportingGoods.com. I'm Cam Connors, and I think by now it's getting to the point where a lot of us are hearing of folks, or maybe you have had this happen, where all of a sudden they're getting sick from red meat, and it's beef in particular, but I believe pork and lamb and such can be affected as well. But come to find out, it's almost always linking back to a tick bite, and in fact, I actually know someone personally who had this happen to them. So here to talk with me today is an assistant professor of entomology at UK, Dr. Hannah Tiven. Hannah, thank you so much for taking the time to be on the show today.
Yeah, thanks for having me on.
So let's jump right in. Right off the bat, what is this red meat allergy that we're seeing pop up?
Yeah, so red meat allergy, also known as Alpha-Gal syndrome, it's essentially an immune response to a sugar molecule or a carbohydrate molecule that's found in red meat. And it happens because of a tick bite. So the tick bite somehow, puts this molecule into your system, and your immune system has a reaction to it because it thinks it's a foreign body coming from this tick. And then the next time, if you develop this syndrome, then the next time you eat something that has this molecule, such as, you know, eating beef products or other red meat products, then you'll have an allergic reaction.
I see. And you said it's called alpha-Gal syndrome, or GAL.
Yep, alpha-Gal, because that's alpha-Gal. The molecule that causes the issue.
So this is just a little bit outside of your expertise, because you are more on the insect side of it.
Yep.
But I've actually heard rumors of folks who have developed this and then slowly over time been able to I guess, build up an immunity back towards red meat. Have you heard of anything like that?
Yeah, so I have heard of that. And I'm not sure if it's building up an immunity or if it's more of your immune system becomes a little more tolerant to it. But I have heard plenty of people that have said they had some immune reactions to red meat products or different products like that, and then over time the symptoms got less severe.
Okay, so if somebody were to get this, it's not necessarily, you know, oh, you're never going to eat a steak again.
Right. So it can manifest that way, but in other circumstances, it does go away as well.
Okay. And so you have said that this is transmitted primarily via ticks.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So it's caused by a tick bite. The exact mechanisms of how that all happens is not quite clear yet, because this is a relatively new syndrome that we're learning about. But yeah, it's caused by a tick bite. So your best bet in preventing this syndrome is by preventing tick bites.
Okay, and it's primarily the Lone Star tick. Is it like deer ticks or any other ticks, or is it just the Lone Star we're seeing it with?
So in other parts of the world, it can be associated with Ixodes species. So that's our deer tick is an Ixodes species of tick,
mm-hmm.
And a couple other tick species as well. But in the U.S., it's only been confirmed so far with associated with the Lone Star tick.
So because this is like a beef-type protein, would we say that this is something, say, the tick has latched on to, say, a bovine, and then developed this as some sort of a, you know, then bit a person and developed because of that? Or is it, you know, what I guess what I'm trying to say is there any circumstances that lead to, or, you know, are you more likely to get it if you, you know, get by a tick and you live on a cattle farm?
That's a good question. I'm not sure that we really know that, because we don't fully understand how the tick creates or picks up this molecule in the first place. There's a couple different theories where, you know, these ticks need to feed on three different animals to complete their life stage, so maybe they're picking it up from another animal and then transmitting it to us. But other theories are that it's actually being created kind of in their own gut microbiome. So we don't really know where they're getting it or how they're creating it. So I can't really tell you if, you know, you're more at risk on a cattle farm, except to say that if you have the more animals you have on your property, the more ticks you may also have on your property, because there's more hosts for them, right?
Right. So it is still relative. As you said, it's still relatively new in the research on this. So there's less to go on than we would, you know, sometimes hope for.
Yeah. So we know a lot less than things that we've been looking into for longer, like Lyme disease, for instance.
Exactly. So let's talk about the tick population. I'm sure, you know, this is one of the things that you all monitor throughout your studies, the tick population mm-hmm. in Appalachia.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so since we know that it's associated with the Lone Star tick, that's the tick species I'll talk mostly about. But we have the Lone Star tick throughout the southeast central portion of the United States. It seems like it's moving northward and kind of westward as well.
Mm-hmm.
And this tick is a little different than some of the other tick species that are human biters. It's more aggressive, and instead of, you know, waiting on maybe a piece of grass for someone to pass by, it actually seeks out its next host. So it'll move towards hosts. So it's a little different than other ticks. And some people can feel the bite a little more easily, because it is an aggressive biter. And I will say, I can feel these when they bite me, when I've had them on me before.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I've had them before, and it's almost like a, I wouldn't call it an outright pain, but it's a definite itch.
No. Yeah, an itch is a good way to describe it. Yeah, it's not like a, yeah, not a pain necessarily, but you can feel them, which is, you know, kind of a good thing, because then we can get them off of us as quickly as possible.
Exactly, yeah.
But yeah, we have the Lone Star tick in Kentucky and in West Virginia.
And so, or have we seen, you said that they are moving, so what about, like, do you all study population numbers? Are we seeing, like, an exploding number over the last decade? Is it just growing at an exponential rate, or is it, you know, more stagnant, just a steady growth, or what are we looking at?
So that's another question I can't really outright answer, because we don't have a very good baseline on what these populations were in the past. We just know that we're seeing them more often in newer locations and getting more more bite reports from people and on animals. But I can't give you any type of population estimates, unfortunately.
Okay.
We just don't have that type of information.
And, right, right.
It takes a lot to be able to see what the populations are out there.
Oh, absolutely.
But it does seem like, yeah, it does seem like, you know, just from talking with people, that there's definitely more tick bites happening.
Okay. And again, that could be a number of reasons. Yeah, that could be more people getting outdoors. That could be growth in a population. But there's more than just one factor that goes into to determining that.
Yeah, definitely.
So this, again, may be something you're aware of or maybe not aware of. Are there any efforts underway that you're aware of to curb the tick population? I remember hearing a few years back a rumor about, like, turkeys getting released or something to help, you know, curb the tick population.
I feel like I've heard that rumor in the past, too, and I don't know how well that would help, just because whenever you're using another animal like that for a tick, it's also just providing another food source. But there are a couple efforts that we're trying out. With ticks and really with any pest, it's really important to use multiple different tactics. There's never going to be one silver bullet, right? But using a couple different things to kind of get the population down and focusing in on areas where we're spending more time. Again, we're never going to get rid of all the ticks everywhere, right? But if we can focus in on places we're spending more time, or if we're going out hiking, we're wearing, you know, longer layers and using some other behavioral approaches to reduce our tick bites. There is some research looking at using prescribed fire for reducing tick populations. And we have some research going into that in Kentucky at the Kentucky Department of Fish and Wildlife Resources is looking into that. But I think they're just in the initial stages of trying that out.
Okay. So on a personal level, you know, I'm going to go out to the lake this weekend. I'm going to go fishing and I'm going to be off the bank. Mm-hmm. What are the absolute best methods that I can take to protect myself and my family?
Yeah. And so with ticks especially, that's how you want to be thinking, is looking at prevention and how can I change a few things in my behavior to reduce the likelihood that I'll have ticks on me or have bites. So I would recommend, you know, wearing long pants, and you can get those pre-treated with acaricides, going through something like Insect Shield. You can also treat them yourselves using permethrin. It's just this yellow bottle you can get at any kind of gardening store, and you'll treat it yourself. I like to do that with my clothes. It's a bit cheaper than buying them pre-treated. It won't last as long, but it lasts for about 5 washes. So that's pretty good in my book.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I'll pre-treat my clothes. Yeah, I'll pre-treat them. And then I like to wear DEET or another type of repellent when I'm out and about, too, because they work in different ways. Permethrin kills ticks on contact. DEET makes it harder for them to find you, essentially. And it also helps with mosquito bites. That's nice if you'll be out fishing. You want to be, you know, thinking, what can I do to prevent mosquito bites as well? Because they're also kind of a nuisance.
Absolutely. See, I was actually going to ask, because, you know, you'd mentioned one method. I was going to ask about DEET, like, you know, Off and Deep Woods and those other brands, if they were, you know, as effective as they're advertised to be.
Yeah, so they are. Anything that's going to be EPA registered has gone through a lot of different trials at a high standard to make sure that they are effective and they are safe to use. So yeah, anything that's EPA registered, I would definitely recommend.
All right. Well, is there anything else you'd like to add that we haven't had a chance to cover yet?
Just one other thing is, you know, remember to do your tick checks. So, you know, wearing your long layers, but then also doing your tick checks while you're out and about and when you get back, and just making sure you remove those critters as quickly as possible.
Well, and one thing that I've seen people do, and since you're a specialist in it, I'll go ahead and ask you, would it be a good idea, say, to, instead of, you know, tossing the tick out or killing it, to say, like, put it in a Ziploc bag with the date? That way, if you were to develop some sort of a sickness, you've got the parasite there to give to the medical professionals. Is that a thing?
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. That's a great question. I'm glad you brought that up. Yeah, definitely. So if you find a tick that's been feeding on you, certainly you can put it into some type of Ziploc bag and freeze it, or you can put it into a little vial or prescription pill bottle with ethanol or hand sanitizer that does not have aloe in it, so no hand softening ingredients. And then, you know, keep that, and if you develop some symptoms, you can take that into your doctor and ask them about how to get that tested for pathogens. In Kentucky, we do have a free service for Kentucky residents where you can send in the tick for pathogen testing. That's at University of Kentucky's Department of Entomology. Our Ready Polly's lab will test them for pathogens. It may not get back to you with information very quickly, but you'll be able to get some information on pathogens that are present in a tick, and it also contributes to some community science initiatives to see what kind of pathogens do we have circulating in our tick populations out there.
Absolutely.
I mean, but if you bring it into a medical doctor, they may be able to direct you where to get pathogen testing as well.
Okay, well, that sounds like a really fantastic program with UK, because, well, as you said, it allows us to, you know, find out if a tick that bit us has any pathogens, but also it's like an outreach for you all to gather information from around the state as well.
Exactly. So hopefully I can answer some of those questions a little better in the future.
All right. Well, Dr. Hannah, thank you so much for taking the time. Very insightful information on the Lone Star tick and the red meat allergy that's associated. And I appreciate you taking the time.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me on. Have a great one.
Still to come, Tackle Talk. I finally got to test that underwater camera, and we'll talk some custom lures with Mike Maxwell, owner of Mike's Custom Lures. Keep it here with Hook, Line, and Sinker on 1300 and 105.5 The Jock. Border Sporting Goods is your one-stop outdoor sporting goods store. Family-owned and operated for over 40 years, Borders is the Tri-State's number one outlet for Liberty Safes. Proudly made in the USA with a lifetime warranty, a Liberty Safe will protect what's most important to you from theft or fire. Online at BorderSportingGoods.com or find them on Facebook and Instagram at Border Sporting Goods. Border Sporting Goods, 5876 U.S. Route 60, Ashland, Kentucky.
Oh no, stomach issues again?
Stomach issues?
Who are you?
Your pancreas. I could be the real reason for your diarrhea, gas, bloating, stomach pain, or loose oily stools.
I thought it was my stomach.
People often do, but any of these symptoms could mean having a condition called exocrine pancreatic insufficiency, or EPI. With EPI, the pancreas doesn't release enough enzymes to break down food, but EPI is manageable. Use the symptom checker on identifyepi.com and speak with your doctor. That's identifyepi.com. Sponsored by AbbVie.
Oh, these polymers aren't as flexible as batch K3.
Researcher Laurie is stretched thin.
Did you get the vulcanization analytics from V66? Oh, wait, are these rubber scores from last week?
She needs to hire new lab technicians so she can bounce back into her old self.
I need Indeed.
Indeed you do. Our matching platform lets you spend less time searching and more time connecting with candidates. Redeem your $75 credit at Indeed.com/credit. Terms and conditions apply.
When your car is making a strange noise, no matter what it is, you can't just pretend it's not happening.
That's an interesting sound.
It's like your mental health. If you're struggling and feeling overwhelmed, it's important to do something about it. It can be as simple as talking to someone in your community, or just taking a deep, calming breath when you need it. Nice. For mental health resources, check out loveyourmindtoday.org. At loveyourmindtoday.org, you'll find information that may help you get through a tough time. Things like tips for dealing with stress, how to navigate difficulties like financial worries, anger, substance use, and more. You can also find real stories of how people navigated their own mental health challenges. Because once you start to address the problem, you can go so much further. Visit loveyourmindtoday.org. That's loveyourmindtoday.org. Brought to you by the Huntsman Mental Health Institute and the Ad Council.
snakes, zombies, public speaking. The list of fears is endless. But the real danger is in your hand when you're behind the wheel. Distracted driving is what's really scary, and even deadly. Eyes forward. Don't drive distracted. Brought to you by NHTSA and the Ad Council.
And we're back with a little tackle talk. If you've been following along the last couple of weeks, you know all about this underwater camera that I bought off of Amazon. It ties in line with your fishing rig, supposed to get some really good footage of the fish strike on your lure. And, well, you know, life comes at you about 100 miles an hour sometimes, and it took me a little longer to get this thing out for a test spin than I would have liked it. But this week I was able to get out and try it. So here's what happened. First off, let me say right off the bat that I was a little impressed just in the unboxing of this thing, because it's smaller and lighter than I was really expecting it to be. It comes with a little storage baggie. It's got a charger cable and some little foam pads that kind of stick to the top of it to help with buoyancy. And a concern that I had was getting the memory card out of this thing. And so, you know, I was worried about how watertight the seal on that memory card insert slot, I guess. I was worried it wouldn't be watertight. So I unboxed it, and in fact, I did an unboxing video and did a test on the camera, and you can check that video out now at WJYPAM.com. But during the unboxing, I was impressed because it comes with a QR code in the instructions. You download an app, and through this app, you connect your phone to the camera, and you can access the videos that way. There is no actual memory card slot, so you don't have to worry about there being any kind of a water leak there. As I read the instructions, pretty straightforward. The whole thing, watertight. Got a magnetic strip on the front of it that you use to charge it. That same strip also acts as a water sensor that will kick the camera on and off and start recording after it senses that it's been in the water for 3 seconds. And then it keeps recording until it's been removed from the water for, I believe, 30 seconds. So, like I said, pretty straightforward. No buttons or terribly confusing controls, which, again, it impressed me from a, well, we'll say it's a knockoff brand from Amazon. So I was impressed because of that. Decided to do a test on it. Wanted to test it in a few different water conditions, but I wasn't able to. Hopefully, I'll get to hit up Greenbow this evening. Water there very clear most of the time, so I'm expecting some great footage to come out of there. But I did get a chance to go check it out at Ridenour Lake in Nitro, and the reason I chose Ridenour in Nitro is because the water there tends to be very murky. Now, I will say right off the bat, I love Ridenour. I fish there all the time, but it is by far the muddiest lake I have ever fished in my life. And so I was really curious to see what kind of footage this thing was going to get in murky water like that. So if you want to check that out, head over to WJYPAM and check out that video. You can see that footage. With casting with it, it does add a little bit of weight. Not a lot. Not near as bad as it would be. I would recommend using a heavier rod next time I take it out. Reeling. It feels a lot like a spinnerbait, or even a little bit like a chatterbait. There's a little bit of vibration to it, oddly, but it also prevents you from feeling what the lure is doing. So if you're using a spinner, for example, it's going to be hard to tell if your lure is really picking up that spin action that you want it to have. I'm definitely going to have to be experimenting more with it. Hopefully this evening, want to try out various lures and rigs and see how it handles with each one and how the videos turn out. So for the full details on the camera, again, recommend checking out that unboxing and testing video from Ridenour. It's online at WJYPAM.com. And if I get a chance to take it out again this evening, I will definitely post another video with that as well. Keeping with the tackle talk, as you may know, I like to sometimes feature Appalachian-based lure and gear makers on the show. Today, talking about a veteran-owned lure maker, Mike's Custom Lures. On the phone with me now, owner Michael Maxwell. How are you doing?
Well, I'm doing all right, sir. How are you?
I'm doing very well. I want to say, first off, thank you for your service, and thank you for taking the time to join me today.
Oh, I really appreciate that. Thank you for the opportunity.
Absolutely. So, am I right in saying you're actually based in Ohio now, but you're from West Virginia?
That is correct. Yeah, my last duty station was recruiting here in Ohio. So I just, you know, that's where I'm currently residing at the moment until I find a place back home. And my home is West Virginia. Still have family in West Virginia, grew up in West Virginia, fish West Virginia, hunt West Virginia. I mean, it's just great opportunity for anybody in the outdoor industry to enjoy the great outdoors in the mountain state.
Absolutely. You're originally from, was it the Durban area? Is that right?
No, I'm originally from the Barber County, Harrison County, and then my family moved from Harrison County to Barber County, probably about middle school era, and then I just grew up, graduated Philip Barber in 92, and then joined the service in 96.
Okay, so let's talk about you and your lures. How did you get started making lures?
Okay, I started out making spinner flies, kind of like a Joe's fly that you see in Nutter Fort area.
Right, right. So it's almost the best way I can describe it for people who aren't into fly fishing is it's a cross between a traditional fly and a spinner bait.
Yeah, no problem. Traditional flies are used on fly rods or hand tied.
Right.
They come in various sizes, you know, from a 16 hook, which is really, really small, to 12s, 14s, and then the spinner fly is just a bigger version of that on a number four hook or a number six hook with a spinner blade on the front of it. And then that way it just attracts the trout more because of the flash.
Right.
Especially when you're trolling in the lakes around West Virginia and the streams, you know, things like that area. So that's the difference. And one's used on a fly rod. The other one's used on spinning tackle. With the various rod differences and rod lengths and stuff like that.
Right, right. So, of course, you do more than just those now. You also do soft baits and things like that as well.
Oh, yes, sir. Yes, sir. I transferred from spinners to soft plastics. Now, the reason why I went to soft plastics is the demand was overwhelming for me. I was active duty at the time, and my work with the orders, you know, just got in the way, and I didn't want to disappoint people, you know, from not filling orders. So I just transferred to soft plastics and make them in my basement, still process them here, but I test them out in West Virginia and things like that. So it's just an easier transition for me to fill the orders and get them out. So, you know, people's not disappointed. No one wants to wait, you know, 3 to 5 days or even a week for something to come in the mail when they place an order online.
Right, which is one of the things I was going to ask a little later on, but it's good to go ahead and get it out of the way, is you do offer a very quick turnaround on orders that folks are going to place with you.
Oh, yes, sir. I do same-day shipping.
Oh, that's fantastic.
As long as I'm not in West Virginia and the website's down for testing purposes, as long as I'm able to, I ship the same day, fill everything, ship it out, and that's the way people can have it within a timely manner.
Okay. So going back to how you got started, I mean, you said it started with the spinning flies. So what got you into doing it in the first place? So I assume it's your love of fishing.
That, my dad, you know, God rest his soul, his love for fishing and passion for fishing, I mean, it spans over four decades in West Virginia, so long heritage, my whole family fishes, and then some of his old Casto spinners that he couldn't get made anymore, he's the one that started with me. He bought my first kit. He took me over to Clarksburg, West Virginia for my first fly tying demo with a guy that makes actual trout flies. So I'm like, hey, can I turn this into a spinner fly? My dad wants me to really get into this. He said, sure, here's a bigger version. This is what you do. So it was just from there on, I mean, I just went over there almost every weekend to learn something new, to get the craft started. You know, and then all of a sudden, you know, I started making them, and sold a few, you know, had some stores around Elkins when I was still in high school, after graduation high school, things like that. So, yeah, it was pretty interesting.
Kind of just started out something with you and your dad, and just kind of evolved from there, I guess.
Yes, sir. Yep, it all started with him pushing, you know, getting me the nudge out there to make something that he couldn't buy anymore. You know, a lot of the old spinner makers,
right,
are soon passed, and a lot of them old patterns still work to this day. You just can't see them, or people just don't make them anymore.
Right. Well, and I got to say, jumping on, you know, talking about your dad and how you started young, and I hear stuff like that all the time. That's one of the things that I really love about fishing in general, is it's a way of bringing people together. I talked about it with somebody just the other day. You know, we live in a world that's very divided, and fishing is one of those things that can really unite people, because it's a common goal. It's a common love. And it's also a great way for family to bond and get children involved in it, to help further the love of the sport, but also to, you know, help them grow into the person they're going to be. And I think that's really fantastic. But I'm getting off on a sidetrack. So let's talk about, of course, you said you do, you know, the soft baits now, the soft plastics. What about customization? You know, you are Mike's Custom Lures. So talk to me about customization options and everything that you offer.
All right, customization offers. The custom in my lure making process is when somebody calls me or somebody email me or text message and maybe like, hey, I want this. I use trout mini grubs as an example, because that's the majority of my sales is the trout industry.
Mm-hmm.
It is, hey, I want this body, I want this tail. So if they want like a white body with a chartreuse tail, or they want with glitter, or they want something that glows in the dark, or they want a Pacific size jig head, or, you know, a certain collar, that's the customization of it. I leave it up to the customer to design and make what they want. Yes, I offer the normal products, the normal collars, but also get into the customization of it. And that's where the customer has free range to be like, hey, can you make me this and this collar or that collar? And I can make whatever you want.
Well, and to me, you know? I love lure makers who are willing to do the custom work like that. And because there are some folks who just, you know, are mass cranking out the stuff that's your typical colors. But the customization really allows you to make something that's going to be, you know, for example, my favorite place to fish, I live over in Kentucky. My favorite place is Greenbow Lake. And so, you know, I'm going to want something that's going to be specific to Greenbow, because that's where I fish the most. And so the customization is something that I think a lot of anglers really value.
Right. I got a guy in Tennessee. It's a big crappie fisherman named Tony Riggs. He calls me, you know, emails me sometimes and be like, hey, Wasp Bar Lake like chartreuse and white. I only want chartreuse and white lures, so that's what I'm making. I make him chartreuse and white, and he goes out there and slays the crappie on them, you know?
Right.
It's just one of them things, like certain rivers and certain lakes only like fish seem to only attract to one collar and one collar only.
Right. Well, and you said a minute ago, you know, majority of what you do is trout based, but you do also, you know, bass, musky, crappie, stuff like that.
Oh, yes, sir. Yes, sir. I do crappie. I do musky inline spinner baits. And now I'm getting into the bigger swim baits for musky and pike that will be customized as well. I do obviously the trout stuff, you know, the worms and the jigs and things like that. But, yep, I do a little bit of bass stuff, not much. I do turtles, which is a little bit different from other people.
That is a little different.
And yeah, and I do the swim baits as well. That's different from what other people was doing.
Okay, so let's talk about if folks are interested, you know, in finding more about you and learning more, or maybe they want to place an order. You know, what's going to be the best way for them to do that?
Well, the best way is just go online, mikescustomlures.com. Everything is self-explanatory on the website. It pops up the best collars, the best options. You can start out. If you're new to trout fishing and you don't know where to begin, I offer a package deal where you get a rod, a reel, you get some baits, you get some floats, and it's a one-stop shop for everything.
That sounds pretty fantastic.
Yeah, well, yes, sir. I really appreciate that. Yeah, and they can reach out to me. I'm very adamant about answering all kinds of questions, all kinds of issues. Like, let's just say, you know, someone has an issue with an order or something like that. That really rarely happens. But just in case it does, you know, I'm always there to make it right. Like you said, you know, when you mention how the world is today and things like that, I think being personable is very important, especially when it's a face-to-face business like mine, especially when I do trade shows and things like that. Always try to keep the customer happy. Never take anything for granted.
Oh, yeah. It's customer service 101. I mean, it's you hear the saying, the customer's always right. And I don't always agree with that, but in a lot of cases, I mean, that's the end of the day. You want your customer base to not only love your product, but to love you as well.
Oh, yes, sir. Yes, sir. And it growed extremely well with the word of mouth. I mean, just being out there talking to the people, being able to fish beside people that may not know anything about how to work a jig or the lures or anything like that. And, you know, I give people packs online. I give people packs away at the riverbank. I mean, if you see me out there, if I have something, I'll surely share it with you. And right now I'm in, you know, I'm getting ready to do another trip to the mountains and hopefully meet some more people.
Right. And, of course, you're also on Facebook. That's actually, I believe, how I reached out to you was through Facebook as well.
Oh, yes, sir. Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, now X. I'm on all social media platforms. Easiest way to get me is through the website. There's my office number and my cell number. Text message or call, either one. I mean, able to answer any questions anybody has.
Awesome. Well, is there anything else that we haven't covered yet that you would like to talk about before we wrap up?
No, I really appreciate the opportunity, sir, and you know, thank you for reaching out to me and making this option available, because a lot of people don't know Mike's Custom Lures or know me in general, but you know, hopefully this will help people get a better understanding and try out my products.
Absolutely. Well, Mike, man, thank you again for taking the time to join me today. And again, thank you for your service. Really appreciate everything.
Oh, I really appreciate that, sir. Thank you. Yep.
When we come back, Fishing Muskie on the Fly, we'll chat with Bo Robinson from Natives Fly Fishing right here with Hook, Line, and Sinker on the Jock. Border Sporting Goods, family owned and operated for over 40 years, is the one-stop shop for all your fishing needs. Borders has the largest selection in the tri-state from all the major brands like Shimano, G. Loomis, Abu Garcia, Blue Rock Custom Tackle, Rapala, NetBait, Strike King, and more. Let the experts at Borders help you find the perfect fishing gear for your next adventure. Border Sporting Goods, 5876 US Route 60, Ashland, Kentucky, and online at BordersSportingGoods.com.
The following is a paid advertisement sponsored by Legal Help Center and may not be available in all states.
Have you or your loved ones been injured in an accident that was not your fault? You need to call the Legal Help Center. They handle all types of accidents, from car accidents, motorcycle, DUI, rideshare, to workplace injuries, slips and falls, and many more. Legal Help Center connects injured victims to local area attorneys with experience in your accident. If you've been injured in an accident that was not your fault, you need to call. Get your life back, know your legal rights, and get the financial compensation you deserve. Call the Legal Help Center for a free consultation, 800-438-8080. Speak to a live agent now, 800-438-8080, 800-438-8080.
From the local 2U studio, connecting West Virginia, this is the Valley Sports Station, 105.5 and 98.3 FM, 1300 and 1340 AM, The Jock.
When your car is making a strange noise, no matter what it is, you can't just pretend it's not happening.
That's an interesting sound.
It's like your mental health. If you're struggling and feeling overwhelmed, it's important to do something about it. It can be as simple as talking to someone in your community
or just taking a deep, calming breath when you need it. Nice. For mental health resources, check out loveyourmindtoday.org. At loveyourmindtoday.org, you'll find information that may help you get through a tough time. Things like tips for dealing with stress, how to navigate difficulties like financial worries, anger, substance use, and more. You can also find real stories of how people navigated their own mental health challenges. Because once you start to address the problem, you can go so much further. Visit loveyourmindtoday.org. That's loveyourmindtoday.org. Brought to you by the Huntsman Mental Health Institute and the Ad Council.
Fish on. Now back to Hook, Line, and Sinker on the Jock.
And welcome back for the final segment today with Hook, Line, and Sinker, brought to you by Border Sporting Goods. Let them get you outdoors with everything you need for your next hunting or fishing adventure. Find them online at BordersSportingGoods.com. I'm Cam Connors, and the last couple weeks I have been reaching into the world of fly fishing, trying to bridge that gap between traditional fishing and fly fishing, if you will. My lovely wife, got me a fly outfit, a rod and reel combo for Christmas this past year. And I'm working on getting, we'll say, proficient with it. Mastering it's going to be a long ways off. And one of the things that I talked about last week with Josh Hedrick from Smoke Hole Outfitters was when most people think about fly fishing, the first thing that just instantly jumps in their head is trout or salmon. And yes, that is a majority. That is a huge part of fly fishing. But you can also catch other fish. It's nothing to catch bass, smallmouth, bluegill, and even muskie. And here with me today to talk about their outfitter and everything muskie fishing on the fly, Bo Robinson with Natives Fly Fishing. How you doing today, man?
Doing good, man. Thanks for having me.
I appreciate you taking the time. So let's kick things off. Let's talk a little bit about what you all do, Natives Fly Fishing.
Yes, sir. So we're a full-service fly shop here in Fairmont. We actually just moved to a new location, a bigger facility last year. And we've expanded upon our inventory. We've got everything you need to get you into fly fishing or take that next step into a nicer, newer rod setup. We've got waders, boots, tons of tying materials. And we actually manufacture some of our own products in-house, something really unique and different you don't see in most fly shops. But we have a patent on our catch cam net that we built completely from scratch right here in our shop. We actually have a full-service powder coating business now where we can coat our nets in any color imaginable, but we can basically powder coat anything metal at this point. We're looking into doing some raft frames and some rods and reels and vices and different fishing products in general. And then we process our own bucktails. So we have our own line of fly tying material, bucktails. It's called Appalachian bucktails. We process and dye those here in-house. So
kind of like
we do a lot of different things.
Kind of like a one-stop fly fishing shop, right?
Exactly. That's the goal.
You guys offer guiding services too, right?
We do, yes, sir. Yeah, we have five guides here that'll run the trips. We do several different beginner classes into some trout and smallmouth bass wade trips, and then we do our float trips and primarily focus on muskie and smallmouth for those float trips.
Well, speaking of muskie, I've been dying to talk about it because, when people think of fly fishing, especially people who don't fly fish, they think automatically, like trout and salmon because that's, your most common. But you really can. You can fish for just about any species on a fly outfit, and whether that's, bluegill or bass or muskie.
Yes, sir. You're right. You are absolutely right. Most people don't realize, but their idea of fly fishing is a fly on top of the water that a trout actually will come up and eat on top water. But that's a very small window. In fact, even a trout will eat subsurface 80 to 90% of its life. So that's just a really small window to actually catch them on top of the water like that.
Yeah,
so,
it's
I mean, just the whole sport in general, the gear, the equipment, everything has evolved. So yeah, we're catching everything from saltwater fish to even now muskie on the fly rod.
Well, and like you say, with that small window, so what it is, if people do their research about it, it's a matter of the stage of like the mayfly, for example, of their life cycle. And so you want to toss a topwater fly whenever they're hitting that same stage in their life cycle.
That's right, yeah. That's what we call match the hatch.
So exactly.
When you have a hatch out on the water and you see bugs, that's when you want to try to match that fly.
So talking about musky on the fly, my first thought is, man, that's got to be a challenge. In fact, there's a blog on your website called Musky Fly Fishing 101, and it says, I think the first thing it says is it's both the best and worst fly fishing decision you'll ever make.
That's right. Yeah, it sure is, man. And, you know, they call them the fish of 10,000 casts for a reason. They're just, they're a hard fish to catch. And then doing it on the fly is that much harder. It really is. You know, one thing I do want to emphasize on, though, is the way we target them on the fly here in our home state of West Virginia, we target them in small creeks. You know, we do fish some of the bigger rivers like the Mon or the Tiger occasionally, and there's some really good fish in there, but we fish a lot of the tributaries to these main watersheds, and most people would think there's no way a 4-foot muskie would live in those kind of watersheds, but on the fly, I personally think there's an advantage over gear spin fishing because we're able to cast our flies with intermediate lines on top of structure like down timbers and trees where the muskie tend to stay, and they're very predatorial, so they're, you know, opportunistic. When you're casting a fly in kind of their home area, they're going to eat it. So,
absolutely.
It's kind of, in my opinion, an advantage to a lot of our watersheds, and a lot of people don't realize or even think that out. They automatically think muskie only live in the lakes, like, you know, like Stonewall Jackson Lake or, you know, something like that, but that's just not the case. We have muskie all over this state.
Of course. And so let's talk gear. If you're fishing muskie on a fly rod, obviously you're going to want to opt for a heavier setup, right?
That's right, man. Yeah, you can't do it with your little trout 4 or 5 weight 9-foot rod. Yeah, we jump up into a 10, 11, or 12 weight rod typically.
Heavy
duty
fly. I
love those 11 weight size. Yeah, yep.
They will wear you out.
It's not necessarily that the 7, 8, or 9 weight rods wouldn't handle a muskie, but they will not turn over the big flies we throw for the muskie. I mean, we're throwing flies up to 20 inches sometimes.
Well, see, that's actually something that I was going to talk about, too, was the fly selection, because I was looking on y'all's website, and because, you know, with muskie and pike and traditional, you know, spin fishing, you got some pretty good size lures. And so I was looking at these flies, and honestly, it's more like a bird than a fly. This thing was huge.
They are big, man. They are absolutely crazy to cast. They will wear your arm out by the end of the day. But, you know, we tie a lot here in-house. It's something we really specialize in, the musky fly tying. Now, I don't sell these flies on my website. They're just sold here in the shop because I can barely keep up the demand just locally, let alone online. But we really have gotten into dialing in, you know, our hook placement, the color, the size, and then just the overall weight of casting these flies. So it's been a really cool thing to experiment and try to figure out. And, you know, I've invested about 6 years of my life into these muskie now. And I'd like to say we're starting to understand a little bit of how these fish are, but I just hosted a muskie weekend. I call it Broski. This was our second annual year of doing the Broski Bash. Last year it was unbelievable. I mean, the amount of big fish caught and just overall fish seen, it's just the stars aligned last year perfectly. Well, this year was the exact opposite. It's like every small juvenile fish came out, and only one good 45-inch muskie was caught all weekend out of 30 guys fishing. And, you know, we fish just about every watershed possible.
Well, you know that.
So it's just, it humbles you. As an angler, you start to figure things out, and these fish will just, they'll just laugh in your face, basically.
Well, and you know that one, that one guy that caught the big fish, he walked away like a king. You know, he was sitting pretty high.
He's got the bragging rights for sure.
So,
no, what it really boils down to is just, water temperatures get these fish, spawning this time of the year, and all those big fish were just paired up and spawning, and they just weren't willing to eat, you know, during their spawn. So that's just really what it boiled down to, was the timing this year. The water temps were at 50 last week, and then we had a week of just 80 degree temperatures, and it warmed our water up quick, and these fish were just doing their thing. So,
yeah, we saw it down here in Charleston too, man. The temperatures just it just spiked almost overnight.
Exactly. Yep.
So,
exactly.
In talking about gear, this is something I was kind of curious about, because with musky, obviously you got some pretty sharp teeth there. Is that a major concern? Like, do you have to have a different kind of leader and tippet, or how's that work on a fly? Because that, that tippet can get pretty thin.
Absolutely. Yeah, man. We run a 35-pound stainless knotable wire as our bite section. And, the way we run our leader setups is basically like a 40 to 60-pound fluorocarbon leader. And we keep things everything really short, so we can work a figure eight without any of those knots in our the eyes of your rod. So basically our whole setup from end of our fly line to the fly is about 2 feet.
Okay. Yeah, that's a real short then.
Super short. Yeah.
All right. So in one of the blogs, because looking at your site, man, I want to try this. I know I probably won't catch one, but I really want to try this. And in one of the blogs, on your site, the author really stresses strip setting the hook instead of just yanking the rod. Is there a reason for that?
Absolutely, that's something I can't stress enough. Especially like you mentioned, I get guys that want to try this, and they come from the trout world, and what we call a trout set is when you lift the tip of your rod up in the air, and then just that motion in itself will actually set the hook into a trout or a bass's lip. But a muskie's jaw is so bony that you actually have to penetrate with that hook. You have to drive that hook into the bone of their jaw. So a strip set is just you continuing to strip the fly as hard as you can into the bone. And you trout set and lift your rod, they're spitting that hook back in your face, laughing and swimming off. I mean,
right, so
it happens all the time.
The strip set's going to give you a much better chance of actually setting that hook.
That's right. Yes, sir.
Before we wrap it up, is there anything else that you want to let folks know about natives or fly fishing musky, or just anything else you want to talk about before we wrap it up today?
Nothing on it really coming to my head, nothing in particular. I will say smallmouth bass are awesome.
Oh, yeah.
They're very underrated fish, especially on the fly. It's something we kind of specialize up this way. And, we don't have great trout fishing in our neck of the woods, or probably you don't either there in Charleston area. But the smallmouth bass is just, they're willing to eat. They pound for pound, probably one of the best fighting fish. And honestly, you just can't get a better fish, in my opinion. So,
well, actually, it's
something.
It's funny you mention that, because next weekend's show, I'll be talking with some folks with the Greenbrier River Classic, where they're fly fishing. It's a tournament fly fishing smallmouth. So we'll be talking about that on next weekend's show.
Awesome, man. Yep, very good time down there. So.
But hey, thank you again for taking the time to be on today, Bo Robinson with Natives Fly Fishing. Find you guys online. Your website is nativesflyfishing.com. That right?
That's right, man. Yep. And I'm actually updating it now, and we're doing some new nets and stuff on there. So website will be updated very soon with some new things. So
awesome! A lot of things to check out. I gotta say, I like your site, man. Y'all got a lot of information on there. I really like it.
Thank you very much. It's funny. Running a business, you learn all different kinds of things, like building a website. I never thought I'd get into, but
hey, you did a good job, and I appreciate you taking the time to be on today.
Yes, sir. Thank you for having me.
That's going to do it for Hook, Line, and Sinker today. A big thanks to all of today's guests for joining the show, and don't forget, we are podcasting on all your favorite platforms now. You can find us on YouTube, Pandora, Spotify, Amazon Music, and others. And, of course, be sure to follow The Jock on Facebook as well for all the updates on the show. Thanks again for listening, and until next week, I'll catch you later.
Miss part of today's show? Listen again and catch past shows on the podcast at WJYPAM.com and on the Jock mobile app. This has been Hook, Line, and Sinker with Cam Connors, brought to you by Borders Sporting Goods on the Jock.
You said you'd never buy your kid candy from the checkout aisle or forget extra diapers and never give in to a meltdown. You'd never lick your thumb to clean their face, never let them have too much screen time, and never bribe them for just one more bite. You say you'd never let them out in public without their hairbrush.
Welcome back never to Countdown 2 on the BetMGM Network, sponsored by
BetMGM.
And you'd
never give them your phone for a quiet dinner.
This is Countdown 2.
So no Alex Gold today, you Grant Paulson with you,
John Mark
car.
Alongside. BetMGM Network,
no,
Infinity Sports
happen.
Network. You can watch us.
Cars get hot fast, and kids can be at risk in temperatures as low
here.
As 60 degrees Fahrenheit.
Sport oftentimes this
never
time of year,
happens.
Certainly nationally,
before you
that
leave
gets
the
a little
car,
bit of the shaft is the National Hockey
look,
League.